This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. It's shameful as hell, says Benjamin Day, executive director of the pro-single-payer Healthcare Now, of the DNC platform committee's shameful vote against a single-payer amendment. Thank you very much, Benjamin Day, for joining us. Let's begin by situating ourselves with understanding the work of your organization, Healthcare Now, and then get into the specifics of what this has to do, being in the middle of a pandemic, the upcoming elections, and what should be a healthcare plank position for the people of the United States.
Healthcare Now is the national umbrella organization for Medicare for All. We have a lot of allied groups who are also fighting for Medicare for All around the country, but we are the group that supports local and state grassroots organizations that are specifically dedicated to winning Medicare for All in the country, which, as you say, has become, during the largest healthcare crisis in our times, has really become an urgent and desperate issue.
I just think we should just set the pace for other people who still may be a little bit foggy on what universal health care, Medicare for All, actually means. So the position of your organization in terms of providing health care, please give us some of the parameters of what is being advocated for to provide health care for all.
Basically, every developed country in the world, except for the United States, provides access to health care as a public right. From the day you're born until the day you die, you have access to health care. Now, that doesn't mean that all the hospitals are publicly owned or run by the government, but the insurance system is publicly managed, and it is universal that everyone has access to health care. So we are really the only outlier where healthcare is kind of linked to often your employer. So your employer decides whether you get healthcare or not, decides whether you get good healthcare or not. And if you fall through the cracks of the employment system, there's a very patchwork system of safety net programs for healthcare that you may or may not qualify depending on which state you're in and depending on what kind of work you do. It's a highly inequitable system, and it really fails just about everyone. It also costs about twice as much to have a bad healthcare system like we have that doesn't cover everyone. The countries that have universal healthcare system that just provide it as a public right, it also costs half as much or even a third as much in some of these countries. So there is no moral or economic justification for the way that we do it. So when we call for Medicare for All, we are simply calling for providing healthcare as a public right for everyone.
How does that complicate our fight against the pandemic to have this hodgepodge system in comparison to other countries and their response to their pandemic?
This crisis has just been a shocking to everyone, just a stunning and revealing expose on how our healthcare system does not work, but especially does not work during any crisis like the pandemic we're seeing right now. Millions and millions of people are losing their jobs right now just because so many industries have been shut down as a safety precaution. Obviously, the entertainment industry, food services, there are whole categories of the economy that have been shut down. And until our country is actually able to handle the public health crisis, may be shut down or will be just severely affected for a long time. And since healthcare is linked to employment in the United States, a huge chunk of the people who are losing their jobs right now are also losing their health insurance. And this is right at a time when you desperately need access to healthcare to contain the pandemic. Obviously, people who are uninsured, who might start having symptoms, shortness of breath, fever, things like that, are going to be reluctant to seek healthcare because they're going to be worried about receiving massive healthcare bills that they may not be able to afford to pay.
Just to indicate or deal with one of the foibles that is constantly raised, which is it's not affordable for a society. It takes too darn much money, and or it precludes people having any kind of choice. And I'm just dealing with some of the most crass and vulgar and offensive arguments that have been raised primarily by, well, not just the Republicans, but certainly even the Democratic Party during the course of the debates, where we saw that from virtually everybody except for Bernie Sanders. So why don't we go through those arguments?
those are good points to raise, and some of it is crass, and it comes from, you know, advertisers from the insurance industry or campaigns who are opposing Medicare for All doing testing messaging that they think will undermine support for Medicare for All. Some of it is, I think, ordinary folks who have reasonable fears about a huge change in the healthcare system and how it will affect them. But countries that have universal healthcare pay half as much or less for better access to care, for more comprehensive coverage. So this notion that it will somehow cost more to cover everyone is actually not the case. You can see how that might intuitively make sense. You'd think if we're going to cover more people, it will cost more. But in reality, most of our money that we pay, when you pay a portion of your salary, goes towards a healthcare premium. Maybe your employer takes out a chunk of your salary and you may pay a chunk on your end as well. Most of that money actually does not go to healthcare. It doesn't go to nurses, it doesn't go to doctors, it doesn't go to hospitals. It basically gets skimmed off by for-profit middlemen who are just feeding off of this system. So it gets skimmed off by health insurance companies. If you look at Medicare, for example, which is a public, basically universal healthcare system for seniors that we have here in the United States, Medicare pays less than 2% of your tax dollars that go towards Medicare on administration and overhead. A private insurance company will skim off anywhere from 10 to 30% of your healthcare premiums before it ever reaches the healthcare provider. So this is why our system is expensive and it doesn't cover people, because of these for-profit middlemen. As soon as you cut out those for-profit middlemen who are just stealing money out of the system, sending it to dividends for shareholders, and instead dedicating all that money to care, you can actually cover everyone and spend much, much less, which is what the rest of the world frankly does. During the Democratic primary debates, I remember Pete Buttigieg in particular, but also Joe Biden, would often say, hey, we should just have Medicare for the people who want it, right? Not Medicare for all, so that you could choose to keep private employment-based private health insurance, or you could choose sort of a Medicare-type system. And this is a total spin. First of all, we should acknowledge that if you have employer-based health care, you do not get to choose it, right? Your employer is choosing it for you. So we have a corporate decisions, and even, to be honest, your employer doesn't have that much choice, because often their healthcare premiums rise so much that to remain competitive, sometimes they are shifting costs onto their workers, forcing you into limited networks. When you have a universal healthcare system like Canada does, you have full choice of all providers, which we do not have here in the United States. So a public universal healthcare system, a Medicare for All system, you get full choice of which doctor you want to go to. You get full choice of which hospital you want to go to. There's no limited networks in any developed countries except ours about like which specialist you can see. You're never going to have a surprise medical bill if you happen to see a specialist who is like outside of your network, but you didn't know they were outside of your network. These are all problems that only exist in our system. And this notion that Buttigieg and Biden think that we as workers, as U.S. residents, want choice in our health insurance company is just nonsense. We don't need to choose between a high deductible plan and a low deductible plan if everyone has access to one comprehensive health insurance plan. During the Democratic primary, the health insurance industry was actually running ads attacking Medicare for All in every single primary state. And this phrase that they often used was, we don't want a one-size-fits-all plan, that everyone should have their choice of health insurance plan. And I would ask you, what size of insurance plan fits a human? Only comprehensive health insurance, where you can get the care that you need when you really need it, is the right size. They are using that. That's like corporate newspeak for, we're going to give young people and students bad health insurance with high deductibles and copayments. They think that's the size that fits young people who maybe are less likely to get sick. But it means you're taking on a risk where if you do have a catastrophic illness or injury, it could bankrupt you and ruin the rest of your life, essentially, your financial life. So one size really does fit all when it comes to health insurance coverage. We all need comprehensive health insurance coverage. So this myth of choice is really an insidious one, as you say.
Recently, I went to a demonstration where people were railing against the reopening of the housing courts to commence eviction proceedings. And of course, the people who are in the housing courts, which are the lower courts, are generally people who are poor. And they're poor people in this context that have very often lost their livelihoods
and are virtually destitute. And of course, there is the reality that they were, in certainly in New York, predominantly people of color, black and brown people. Now, at the rally, and there were any number of people who had already contacted the contagion. They had had COVID. And now we're actually getting bills. They had no insurance. They had no employment at this juncture. And now we're getting bills of $35,000, $45,000. So we're operating in a period that, notwithstanding what people who may have been insured, who have lost, we have millions and millions of people who have lost their employment. So the issue of health care and the issue of health care within the context of COVID is just so immediate. Would seem to me to be the perfect shoehorn in for saying, aha, we absolutely need universal care. No matter what, look at what's happening to everybody, notwithstanding people who heretofore may have had some form of insurance through their employment. Anyway, the imperative for dealing with health care now and the destitution further that is being reaped on the working class from not having a health care system that provides for all of just catastrophic. You know, you get in that additional sense of urgency.
Democratic National Committee recently voted on a party platform which doesn't include support for Medicare for All. To what extent does that preclude now any support by the Democratic Party of Medicare for All?
What concerns me, and really flowing from my rant a moment ago, so this would seem to be the most opportune time and the most necessary time given the spread of COVID, which has sweeping the world and is spiking throughout the country. Bernie Sanders' positioning, to begin with, was already popular. So how is it possible that the Democratic Platform Committee is not universally now accepting and pushing ahead on the issue of Medicare for All? Or is it that they are just considering it and are not there yet?
Yeah, those are both good questions. So to remind people, although the candidates who are advocating for Medicare for All, particularly Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, did not do very well in this primary election, and Joe Biden was elected. For the first time ever, we had exit polling on Medicare for All in every single primary state that voted. And in every single primary state, a majority, usually sweeping majorities of Democratic primary voters or caucus goers, supported Medicare for All. And these are even in the states where Joe Biden did extremely well and won by large margins. Even in those states, like South Carolina, all those same voters who were voting for Biden are also Medicare for All voters. So obviously, primary voters are not single issue voters. Just because they supported Joe Biden does not mean they don't support Medicare for All. So the Joe Biden campaign should have clear indication of where even their supporters want them to go on Medicare for All. But the Democratic platform has not included support for Medicare for All, or, you know, we often call it single-payer health care, since the 1970s. The Democratic convention and the Democratic platform are highly scripted by whichever candidate has the most nominees. I remember in 2016, when Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton were the two leading nominees, there was a debate in the platform committee over whether to include Medicare for All in the platform. There were Clinton delegates who got up to the podium, got up to the mic, spoke passionately in favor of Medicare for All, and then standing in the corner were the Clinton campaign whips would tell all of the Clinton delegates how to vote on each issue. And so they put their thumbs down. They said, vote no on the Medicare for All. And the same people who had gotten up to speak on behalf of Medicare for All then voted against it in the platform committee. Over 85% of Democrats nationally, people identified as Democrats, support Medicare for All. The notion that the Democratic Party has not actually backed it as a policy for 40 years now, 50 years, is just a scandal and is just astonishing and tells us in one simple statement why Democrats have been losing seats all across the country for decades now. So basically what we saw was a very choreographed, very scripted vote that the Biden campaign had told their delegates how to vote no on Medicare for All. By all the indications that I've heard, the Biden campaign has not moved at all on the Medicare for All issue, even though the coronavirus crisis has made it just glaringly obvious that solutions based on employment-based health insurance, he was, you know, he's been advocating for an employment, you know, defending employment-based solutions are just absurd and are not going to work during this crisis and don't work at any period of time.
The Sanders delegates are threatening to vote against the entire platform when it comes mm-hmm. up for a vote in the convention. You think that would exert pressure on the campaign to change mm-hmm. their tactics?
I think it's meaningful, and my understanding, I believe that the Sanders campaign is not actively encouraging their members to oppose the Biden platform. Sanders is trying to, you know, play nice, and he doesn't want to undermine the Biden campaign. But on their own, you are correct. Many of the delegates, the Sanders delegates and I think other candidates' delegates, have just had enough. The latest that I've heard, there are more than 700 Democratic delegates who have voted to vote against the entire platform if it doesn't include Medicare for All. We will be actively working to expand that number. It's not going to reach a majority because, again, the Biden delegates are going to be carefully whipped to vote for the platform. The platform will pass, but I think the fact that a huge chunk of delegates are just not going to even support anything on the platform unless it includes Medicare for All will send a powerful statement.
What other things are you doing to whip up both information in the public arena about this, and to what extent are there other mechanisms for breaking through what is a calcified or worse, perhaps corrupt process from the Democratic National Committee that really prevents an honest and meaningful debate and input from the public arena to be able to come up with progressive, meaningful planks, particularly given the state of pandemic and the issue of health care at this juncture? What else can be done and structurally to really tackle the recalcitrance, really the demagogy, if you will, and control of the hierarchy of the Democratic Platform Committee?
I guess the way I would look at it is we really saw a surge in support for Medicare for All that happened particularly in 2017. Part of it was Sanders got very close, had a chance of winning presidential candidate who ran on Medicare for All, and that was eye-opening to people. The establishment would have had it that that was not possible up until 2016. We had a widespread support for Medicare for All across the country, but a lot of people felt hopeless that we could win it, and I think the Sanders campaign in 2016 created that hope. And then even more interesting was in 2017, Republicans ran a year-long effort to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. And I had kind of worried that at that moment, what would happen would be that people would dig in and say, let's just protect what health care we have, even though it's not very good, and that it would really play into the sort of DCCC Democratic leadership position that you were just describing, which is that essentially our position on healthcare is going to be let's defend what we have, which is the Affordable Care Act. And that is not what happened. There was a national uprising against, you know, the Republican attempt to replace and repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. But when people got out and they started going after their legislators in public town hall meetings, bird-dogging them when they were just walking down the street, showing up and invading Washington, D.C., they were not just saying we need to keep the health care we have. They were really saying we need Medicare for All. We need not only to keep the pitiful health care safety net we have, but we need a comprehensive health care system that covers everyone and that doesn't fail us. And that is when it was right during that repeal and replace moment that we saw a huge surge in Democratic sponsors of the Medicare for All bill in the House especially, but also in the Senate side. And we hit record high levels of co-sponsorship that we have never seen in the history of this country yet. So we are really just going to have to continue building that massive grassroots pressure from the bottom up. I don't think that we're going to convince Democratic leadership to fight for this until they are literally surrounded. And, you know, they have a shrinking number of Democrats in Congress who are in that camp, that leadership camp, let's just defend the Affordable Care Act. And I think we just need to keep chipping away until that group is so small that it's not a viable position for the Democratic Party. It's going to be a grind, to be honest. It's going to be a lot of hard grassroots work in each district, and we do have a national coalition that works on this.
You've also initiated a petition drive to rev up the action on this front to support Medicare for All. Tell us how to contact Healthcare Now to get on board.
We just, the other day, announced a petition specifically targeting the party platform. So we really just want the DNC to, I think part of this is every time the Democratic Party fails to fully embrace Medicare for All, we should make Democratic Party leadership really feel the heat and pay a political price for it from their own membership. And each year, that price needs to get higher and higher. So when they do just abhorrent things like refusing to include Medicare for All in the party platform, if you're resisting even that basic acknowledgement that we need Medicare for All during a massive health crisis where everyone is losing their jobs and losing their health care, then you should pay a massive political price from your base. So that's what we're trying to do right now. But again, our work is going to focus more so, especially as we enter the August recess and legislators are going back into their district, of pressuring legislators to sign onto the bill. And there's also another thing I should mention right now, which is the Senate is debating the CARES 2 Act, as they're calling it, which is the second round of coronavirus relief. And there's a danger that the Senate will include zero support for people who are losing their health insurance, the millions and millions of people who are losing their health insurance. So Bernie Sanders has filed a bill called the Healthcare Emergency Guarantee Act. And although it's not exactly Medicare for All, it would enable Medicare to cover everyone who has lost their health insurance in the country. So essentially, Medicare would provide wraparounds to provide comprehensive coverage to everyone who does not already have coverage through their workplace. And we think it could be a good stepping stone towards Medicare for All once we're past this crisis. So we will also be fighting for that Healthcare Emergency Guarantee Act, and I would encourage everyone to call their senators, because there's a shockingly large list of Democrats who are not even on board that bill.
So what is your website for people to keep up to date on this and also to join the petition drive?
Yeah, our website is healthcarenow.org. So that's healthcare-now.org, and you can easily find us on Facebook and on Twitter as well. We just had a series of actions because July 30th was Medicare's 55th anniversary, and people forget the fight that we needed to win universal health care for seniors, even though that universal health care is not as comprehensive as it needs to be, and that we do have a universal public health care system that works well in the United States. It's more popular, it's more effective than private health insurance for everyone under 65. So remembering that fight and bringing it into the present.
And if I may, there are marches that are going to be taking place all over the country that are supporting the issue of Medicare for All, and we have and must take that opportunity to do it, to push ahead along with the petition campaign and so on. But finally, I want to also ask you, Benjamin Day, how is the issue of Medicare for All a matter of Black Lives Matter?
Yeah, that is a really profound question, and there's a lot of answers to it. I mean, I would start with the history of how healthcare intersects with systemic racism. We might ask, why are we the only country without a universal healthcare system? How is it possible that all these other developed countries have moved to it, some earlier than others? And I think the reason is primarily the system of structural racism in the United States. The reason that Medicare and Medicaid were passed in 1965, but not a universal healthcare system, which was actually the original intent, was that at the time Medicare and Medicaid were passed, the healthcare system was still racially segregated in the South. And Southern Democrats, whose votes were needed to pass the universal healthcare system, opposed it because they knew that having a federally, publicly financed healthcare system and universal health insurance would have led to the desegregation of physicians' offices and hospitals in the South at the time. So they were adamantly opposed to a universal healthcare system. And after we lost that kind of window, which was blocked by Jim Crow politics, essentially, we had a couple of decades of very conservative Republican presidents and Congresses. By the time there was another potential window to pass universal health care in the 1970s, a very large health insurance and health care for-profit industry had sprung up to oppose it. So we kind of waited longer than most countries did, and by the time we had a small window to pass something, it was much, much harder, and today it is much, much harder because of this massive lobby that works against us. But that having been said, when we link health insurance system to employment. First of all, we are replicating all of the racism in the employment system and in the workplace. So as most folks know, there's been lots of studies showing that even if you have a typically African-American sounding name, you are 50% less likely to be given an interview if you send in the exact same resume as a person with a traditionally white sounding name. So we have massive racism and racial bias in our work system. So it is harder to get a job for people of color who are equally qualified. It is harder to keep a job for equally qualified people of color. And it's harder to get a job that is high quality, that has offers health insurance. So all of the racism in the employment system gets transferred over to your access to health insurance. And then on top of that, we usually see an additional layer of racism within the healthcare system itself. People of color are much less likely to get good quality care for cancer. They're less likely to be treated for pain by doctors. They are more likely to be denied coverage by their insurance plans. Racism is just systematic within the healthcare system. I strongly suspect that there are far more lives lost due to racism and racial bias in the healthcare system than there is in the policing and criminal justice system. But we will never see like kind of a video of that transpiring. You know, you're not going to see the dramatic video of a doctor treating a person of color differently than a white person leading to their death. But it does happen, and I think it is equally urgent that we address racism in the healthcare system as in the criminal justice system.
Benjamin Day, thank you for your work. Thank you for your information, and now it rests with all of us to make it very clear in the limited window of time that we have before the election and before there is a solidification or rejection, if you may, of the positioning around health and the acceptance of Medicare for All, for us to get on the horn, fill out the petitions, otherwise demonstrate, be visible, be visual, and make sure that we wind up this time. The imperative is upon us for a system of Medicare for All. Universal health care, single-payer health care, supported. Thank you, Benjamin Day.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been speaking with Benjamin Day, Executive Director of Healthcare Now. Thanks for joining us, and keep that pressure on for universal healthcare.
I'm Mimi Rosenberg with Ken Nash, and you've been listening to Building Bridges. Stay strong, stay well.